The Tattooist of Auschwitz was the best-selling novel by Heather Morris. In 2003, while working in a hospital in Melbourne, Heather Morris was introduced to an old man called Lale Sokolov, who told her the story of his life during World War II in the Nazi concentration camp Auschwitz-Birkenau. His story was the basis of Morris's novel, The Tattooist of Auschwitz. Lale also told her the story of the 16-year-old girl, Silke, who he said saved his life. For her second novel, Silke's Journey, Morris has researched Silke's life and the lives of other women detained first as a prisoner in Auschwitz-Birkenau and later in one of Stalin's gulags. Maura McHugh has been reading Silke's Journey for us. Maura, The Tattooist of Auschwitz was a huge best-selling book. Why do you think that was so successful? Was it that verbatim story that she got from Lale Sokolov?
Yeah, I would. I think it's the fact that she spent 3 years with him and he detailed this story. And also there is a kind of a love story at the center, which I think appeals, you know, to a great deal of people, that in such a terrible place that two people can, in extraordinary circumstances, meet, form a relationship and actually survive. And in fact, they did and were married for a very long time.
What, if any, is the connection between the characters in The Tattooist of Auschwitz and Silke's Journey?
Silke herself, she aided Lale at one point in the... and they were friends. He also referred to her as the bravest person he ever met. And, you know, I think from what Morris has said is that people were very intrigued by her and they kept asking her, when are you going to tell her story? And that's what she set out to do.
So obviously Lale told her some of Silke's story, but then he obviously had no experience of the Russian gulag. So she had a lot of research to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's the majority of the book is set there. Just to explain that they, you know, the book actually opens with her being freed by the Russians and then accused by them of being a spy and then being sentenced to the gulag, Verkhuta, in just in it, within the Arctic Circle, in fact. And even the journey there so is very quick. So literally, I'd say only about 30 pages in, you're actually in the gulag.
Yes. So you said the Russians liberate the prisoners in Auschwitz, but they are suspicious of Silke. Why is she compromised?
Well, they claim that she's, you know, the reason. So she was 16 when she entered and she's 18. So she's been there for over 2 years and she has survived, which they feel is very suspicious. And also they claim that she's been in a sexual relationship with the Germans. And as a result, she was collaborating with them. Now, of course, her point, which is exactly true, is that she was a prisoner. So it isn't exactly, that's an abusive relationship. That's not actually, you know, there's no consent involved there. So, but anyway, and the other thing is she had a great facility for languages because there were many people at the camp. So as a result, then they also said she was a spy.
Can you give us some of the background then? They go by train to the gulag. These gulags were created by Stalin from about 1930 to the early 1950s. And something like 18 million people spent time there and so many people died there. Mm-hmm. Not through execution like in the Nazi death camps, but really the snow and the terrible cold took care of most of them. Why did he set them up?
Oh, you know, that's a great way to get rid of dissidents. And in fact, there was also a great deal of coal up there. And, you know, if you condemn people to, if you call them dissidents, you get rid of people who could cause trouble with your new regime. And also, they're also, you know, a form of indentured servitude, you know, they're worked to death. They don't have, I mean, the conditions they are working in and also the lack of any facilities means that pretty much for many people, it's a death sentence. And then even if you survived it, it certainly greatly shortened your life.
Silke has come from the horrors of Auschwitz, even though she had a certain privilege, but a privilege she had to buy with her body, really, whether whether she wanted to or not. She had no choice in it. But then now she's in the gulag, and again she finds herself in a hut with other inmates, other women, who are a bit suspicious of her as well as she having her own guilt about what happened in Auschwitz.
Yeah, of course, people from all over the Soviet Union, as it was then referred to, are coming there, and many of them are dissidents. Some are criminals, though the vast majority in her hut happened to be sort of deemed politically problematic. And, you know, so they're not familiar with the camp, and she doesn't even like to think about the camp. And many people would be suspicious as to why from someone from that camp would end up here. So that would, so she doesn't want to refer to that at all in her life. And also, one of the people in her hut sort of hears about it and then blackmails her during her period there.
Yes, and she also suffers survivor guilt, doesn't she? Where she tries to be a good person, and she is lucky enough to get work in the infirmary. So in some ways she can be helpful and kind to people.
Yeah, I mean, she sees the suffering of everyone, even the people who are horrible to her, or, you know, because the thing is, everyone in this system is being brutalized. Nobody is... very few people are, you know, deserve what's happening here. Even by any standards, this is a torturous life. So, and because she's in the infirmary, pardon me, she's actually treating people with injuries, and she even gets to see some of the people who have been terrible to her in their final moments. And she understands that the system has made them this way.
Now, obviously, she wrote The Tattooist of Auschwitz, but she had the great help of Lale. What is, how descriptive are her descriptive powers up to, let's say, the vast terrain of the gulags, both the camp and then beyond when she goes into the mining territory?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very compelling story. It's very tightly written from her point of view of how she experiences and deals with, she goes through bouts of depression, but she constantly feels she needs to survive. And she just seems to, you know, move on. I think it was, you know, that I wouldn't, the device of the fact that she works in the infirmary means that she is, you know, she gets to see a big cross section of people, where if you were working at, say, which a lot of the women are, and all what they do every day is take mountains of coal in buckets and put them into the railway trains that are going throughout the Soviet Union. So you wouldn't see a lot, but in this she actually interacts with loads of people, and then she is at one, she trains up to be a nurse, she sees the women in the maternity, and then she also goes out on ambulance runs, so she actually sees the mines. So it's a smart move, because you get a greater sense of what's happening out there than you would if she was just stuck in one job.
Yes, in an afterword, Owen Matthews, a historian, talks about creating these mines. Mm. And in the coldest of conditions, groups of men had to go out and really dig with chisels into these coal mines.
Yeah, and I mean, there was no care for their safety. So in fact, when she goes out in the ambulance many times, it's for explosions and cave-ins. And, you know, she treats every single person as needing saving, where, say, a lot of the guards don't care. And even maybe some of the other prisoners don't care. Nobody wants to. They have a precarious enough existence. They're not going to push themselves for someone else sometimes. But she, in the story, she's always trying to save people.
But Maura, there has been a lot of controversy about this book and also about the tattooist of Auschwitz. But in this book, it's, I think, Silke, the woman Silke is based on. It's her family are very unhappy with what Morris has done.
Yeah. Her stepson. So there is a kind of love story in the book, and it doesn't really occur until very towards the end. And it's the name of the person is called Alexander. But then, when you read the afterword, you know, where after the novel ends, you hear from her, and that's actually a fictionalized version of the true person. Ivan Kovac, and he was a real person and has a son from a previous relationship, and in fact Ivan didn't see his son for a very long time after these events.
Yes.
And he's very unhappy. He didn't think that this, he disputes a great deal of what Heather Morris says about her, even though she also goes to great pains in her afterwards to explain how much research she did do. And he did meet her, and he didn't think that what he said was okay. The kind of thing she wanted to tell.
All right. Well, people can make their own decision on Silke's Journey by Heather Morris, and it's published by Zaffray.